Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, it's Monday. We're going to do those mailbag questions, our last mailbag of the regular season. Maybe for a little bit, we're going to be into the playoffs at this time next week, which is very exciting on a number of levels. So we're not necessarily going to do a mailbag, but if you still have questions, feel free to drop them on Twitter to lockedoncavs@gmail.com. over on the Cavs Reddit page, and to add Locked On Cavs on Twitter. Before we get into today's show, just want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the best way for you to buy and sell tickets right on your phone. You can get it on any smartphone, whether it's an iPhone or an Android, and you're going to get the best deals possible on SeatGeek. You're going to know what the ticket exactly costs, where your seat is, what your view from the seat is, if it's good compared to every other ticket out there. You're going to get all the best tickets from all the best sites right in one place, and it's really convenient, and it's your one-stop shop to find a good ticket. I have SeatGeek on my phone. I've used it in the past to get Migos or run the Jewels, Cavs tickets, whatever you need, you can find it on SeatGeek. And with Cavs playoffs games coming up, it might be a good way if you're not lucky enough to get tickets when they go on sale and you want to go see the Cavs in the first round, the second round, the third round, maybe the finals if they get there again. You're going to want to use SeatGeek to get those tickets. And today, as always, my listeners can save $20 on their first purchase on SeatGeek by using the promo code LOCAVS. That's LOCAVS. And you're going to get $20 back on your first purchase from SeatGeek. So go download that app today. Use the promo code LOCAVS. Enter that in under the settings tab and you'll get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase. So before we get into the mailbag questions, a couple of things have happened since we last talked on Friday. Of course, the Cavs lost to the Hawks on Friday, 114-110, in a pretty apathetic game where Kyrie Irving complained about his knee, and Tyronn Lue said it sucked that they lost that way. So that happened. It wasn't a pretty game. But then they followed up with a loss on Sunday where they were up by 26, ended up going to overtime. LeBron fouls out, Love fouls out for a second, then actually doesn't foul out, and they lose 126-125. People right now, I think, are a little bit freaked out by this. I think you're seeing the Cavs frustrated. I think you're seeing these things as sort of a bad thing, especially coming on the heels of that Boston win. I wouldn't have guessed that if we were looking at where we were last Wednesday, I didn't think we would be here right now. For me, that Cavs-Celtics game was a big stepping stone for them. It's emblematic of how good they can be. And they blew a 26-point lead in the fourth quarter and lost to a Hawks team that was missing all of its good players on Friday. They're now tied with the Celtics. Two games to go. Boston has an easier schedule. The Cavs get Miami and Toronto. Boston, I believe, plays the Nets. And they just have an easier schedule. Not a good loss for the Cavs. I mean, there's certain aspects of it that I think you certainly it'd be okay for you to write off. I'm not going to say they're inexcusable, but you had some really bad officiating at the end of that Hawks game that I think really kind of cost the Cavs. I mean, you look at the jump ball that kind of extended the game a little bit, and both the Hawks touching that ball right out of bounds. I think the foul call on LeBron was awful. That was an awful, awful call. So you can certainly get into there. And I think this Kyrie Irving quote is kind of telling that he had. He said, "You never want to be in a situation like this, but you can always be worse. For us, we've just got to think about what's ahead and move on to the next game." I think that's a pretty good attitude to look at this game. This game, and both games really over the weekend, are not going to matter in June if the Cavs get to the finals again and they lose. Maybe they lose, because I don't think they're going to lose in this way. I can't imagine that the Cavs are going to be this unfocused in the playoffs. I think the switch to an extent is there. I don't firmly believe in it, but I think it's there. I think this team certainly can flip some sort of switch. I don't think the way they lost these two games are necessarily emblematic of how they're going to play in the playoffs. I think more like the Boston game is the way to go. I think there are things they need to fix. I think the defense is still kind of an issue. I think there are rotation issues that we're going to get into, the meta questions that I'm not a fan of, but we will see. I don't think these losses necessarily are emblematic of what the Cavs are as a team. I think we could certainly know that in 2 months' time. We could certainly know that once the season ends up and let's say lose in the conference finals or something like that. Then certainly we can look at these as telling signs. Right now, I don't believe that is where we're at. I think we're seeing a team just kind of going through some weird stuff and just not trying that hard. I mean, look at how well they played those first three quarters before they took their foot off the gas. I'm open for the critiques of them taking their foot off the gas. I'm open for all that stuff, but I do think there is something to be said that this is not really indicative of what's to come, and we will see. We'll see what changes. We'll see a couple other different things here. We'll see how things end up shaking out in the playoffs, but I don't think these are losses that necessarily indicate where the Cavs are headed. So they're frustrating. They're sucky to watch. The Cavs are never undramatic, but not dramatic, but they are where they are. And I don't know if you'll remember these in too much time. And I think it's telling that Lou and LeBron are not exactly frustrated by these losses visibly in front of the media. So take that for what you will. Other news, the Cavs did waive DeAndre Ayton. It's a bit surprising on Sunday. He made the trip to Atlanta and all that stuff. And that was kind of surprising. The Cavs now have an open roster spot. It's been reported that they're going to fill that open roster spot. And per Chris Reichert, front of the pod from the Step Back, a guy who's pretty in tune. He's not, you know, maybe not a Woj, but he's very in tune, I think, in certain circles. He reported that the guy the Cavs are going to sign is Dante Jones. Dante Jones is a guy who played with the Cavs last year. He joined the team around the time last year. He's not, in terms of a player, he's certainly worse than Liggins. And I think he is going to provide something very specific. He's not going to play. I mean, he had those plays last year in the playoffs that get him some recognition. But last year he came in after playing in the D League all year. This year he hasn't played since the finals. He is, to me, the read on this is clear that they want to get a guy who is a locker room veteran, who is tough, who's going to bring an edge and boost the locker room in that sense. Liggins wasn't necessarily going to do it. He's a pretty quiet guy in that locker room. Not going to rub off guys in that sense. I think he could have been more useful in terms of playing defense and stuff like that, but this is the direction they're going. I think it's a better option than a Varejao. You know, if you signed Sanders, I find it hard to believe that they would have considered an Eric Moreland or someone like that, so take that for what you will. I think it's a pretty interesting signing from the sense that it's clearly a locker room thing. It's clear that they think they need something like that. I think LeBron trusts him. Him and James Jones now will be very strong voices in that locker room. We'll see what they have to say about it when it becomes official, if this ends up being the case. But Chris wouldn't have reported this if it wasn't something real. So big scoop for Chris there. Pretty interesting if that is certainly the case. I think, he's a better option than a lot of the guys that were also mentioned. But he provides a specific role. I would not expect to see him play. I think he's there to be a locker room guy. And to me, that's kind of telling in a number of ways. They want a guy who's going to provide toughness and leadership, and that's certainly what they're going to bank on having value at this point in the year. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if that's what they end up doing. We'll see all these different things, but interesting decision there, and we'll certainly talk about that more as we hear about it, and potentially Wednesday, Lou will speak on it, and maybe Jones will be around the queue, so we'll get to chat with him a little bit. So this week now we're getting into your mailbag questions. Got so many great questions. Get to all of them here. First question comes via David Kulane via email. He asked, do you think the Cavs would be better off giving Shumpert's minutes entirely to Liggins as he's an actual lockdown defender, or at least split minutes? Thank you. So this is kind of tough to answer now because obviously Liggins is gone, but I wanted to still answer because I think I would make the argument that Liggins as a defender is better than Shumpert. And I think you can leverage him in terms of being an offensive nothing in ways that maybe you can get away with Shumpert's mistakes and these things where Shumpert has all these problems, but maybe they're not as big of a deal. If you're Liggins, you can hide him, and Shumpert's going to make all these mistakes. Dribbling, the bad passing, brick shots. Liggins isn't going to do that. He's going to play very in himself. I think the other thing is, though, if you're going to cut into Shumpert's minutes, they have to go to Korver and JR if you're going to be the best version of yourself. So that's one thing. And two, to be a all-defensive player and do nothing else, you almost have to be an Andre Roberson, who's just so overwhelmingly good on that end to justify it, and Liggins isn't quite that. So I certainly would have been a fan of Liggins getting some time. I understand the concerns of it, but I'm not a big Shump guy, and we'll get into more there. So next question comes from Curticus Maximus. Can K ever become a rotation player in the NBA? That's K Felder. That's a question for the Monday podcast. So I think he can. I think I'm not saying he's going to be Isaiah Thomas, because Isaiah is great. But K is very fast like Isaiah. He's small like Isaiah. He's got really good body control. He is making better reads. He's really cut down on his turnovers of late in camp, and he just has things as an NBA athlete that I think you can't teach. The trick for him is how good can he be in defense. I wonder about that. And how fast can he develop? I've said this on the show before. I think how the Cavs approach him this summer will tell you a lot about what they think of him. He played 13 games with the Charge, put up really good numbers over that span. The Cavs will be in a position this summer to potentially re-sign Darren Williams, sign somebody else, or give that backup point guard role to K. I would be intrigued to see them give him a shot. I could see that there being some uncomfort with that, but I don't think they wouldn't have spent that money on him if they didn't think he could be that. And I personally think he could be a guy who could be a good backup point guard. A guy like a P.J. Tucker is unrestricted. Maybe you can get him to come for cheap. Maybe you can get someone like P.J. Tucker or Thabo Sefolosha to come for on a cheap deal. That's sort of your best-case scenario, I think. And we'll see what they do. I think it'll be a very interesting summer for the Cavs, but I think you're going to be paying a lot of money, and this cap situation doesn't change that too much. So their roster next year, I think we'll have the same pillar guys. Maybe you can get rid of Shumpert, but you're looking at a very similar roster to what you have now, unless you're willing to deal a Kevin Love or a Kyrie Irving or a Tristan Thompson or someone that is making a significant amount of money. That's just sort of the reality. Next question comes from Perry Kellis. He asks via email, what is Amon Shumpert good at? I've went from saying he's underrated as a defender to now he's just terrible at defense. He can't shoot well. He really can dribble. What does he do? So I'll answer this from the way that I think the Cavs view him. I think they think of him as a guy who can defend point guards, who can defend twos and threes in a pinch, who can shoot a little bit. That's how they think they view him as a defender. But I agree with a lot of this assessment. I think I don't want to be super over the top about it or be, engage in some hyperbole about him, because I think he has a baseline level of value. But I think he struggles a lot, and I think when he plays outside of himself, you see him become really frustrating, and you see him drive a lot of people crazy, quite understandably. He does a lot of dribbling where he takes shots that he shouldn't. He takes long twos. He makes some really bad passes. He's best contained as in this mock of a 3-and-D guy, but I think that the idea that he's a 3-and-D guy is a myth in of itself, really. You have a guy who by most people's quote unquote standards, or having like a good shooting year. Like if we're evaluating him, like he's having a good shooting year for him, a career best shooting year in a lot of ways, but it's not a good shooting year. It's not like he's actually become a good shooter. He was really, really good at the beginning of the year. Really, really good for stretches. He has moments in games where you see the defensive ability come back out, but he gets roasted a lot off the dribble. He makes just a lot of bad passes. There's a lot of issues for me with him on Shumpert. And again, I think if the Cavs could get out of his $10 million this summer, I think if they could do that and get someone that's cheaper to replace some of his production, I think they'd probably be better off. And because I'm not sure how necessary Shumpert is. And if we're looking at who I might cut out of the rotation in the playoffs, if they go those nine guys he played against Atlanta on Sunday, if they go down to eight, I think Shumpert would have to be the guy. I think him and Channing Frye would probably be the first two to go. Darren Williams in there as well, if you want to put the ball more in LeBron and Kyrie's hands in a tight series. But it'd be hard for me to play Shumpert, because I do think one of the things the Cavs are going to have to kind of reconcile with is, okay, we know defense are going to try to pack the paint and do different things against LeBron. It's one of the strategies teams will use. If Shumpert's on the floor, they're probably going to leave him alone. They're not going to do that to Korver, and they're not going to do it to J.R. Smith. So, something to watch there. Next question on Reddit comes from DPY87. He asks, with the Bucks, Bulls, Pacers, and Heat all being potential playoff matches, who out of that group do they want to see most and least? So I think you want a team that you can beat and kind of, but also I think get into the flow of things, kind of maybe get your head on correctly in that sense. So I'll answer this in, I think you'd want to play Chicago first. I think Chicago's clearly the worst team of that group, although Jimmy Butler would be a pain to deal with. Then you maybe want Miami, I guess, but they've been playing really well lately. Waiters is coming back. Then I think you'd want the Pacers. No, I think you want the Bucks. Giannis is incredible, but I think overall the Cavs can overwhelm them. The Pacers to me would be the team you'd probably want to face the least. I don't think they would have a problem with any of these teams. I think they'd beat all these teams. Maybe one goes to five or something like that. But I think the Cavs should be favorites in any of these series. I think they would want to beat them. I think the Pacers present the biggest problem because I think they don't necessarily have the best player, because I think Giannis is the best player on any of those four teams, and I think I take Jimmy Butler over Paul George too. But they're gonna be a team that's gonna play their starters and their core guys more, and they've been a lot better with their starters. And Paul's really good, Miles Turner's really good. I think Indiana's the team you'd probably want to face at least, but I think all these teams will be able to maybe push the Cavs in certain areas, but not actually beat them. I think if you could have gotten anybody, you probably would want Atlanta. But I think all of those teams will maybe be in a Detroit-type series where it goes four, maybe five games. But it feels pretty smooth, even though if the games are, you know, five-point wins or something like that. It'll feel like the Cavs are in control. So I think that's certainly the case. Last question this week comes from Patrick McGinnis. He asks, why doesn't the other D will play, in reference to Derek Williams? So Derek Williams, to me, I think the baseline level is you have to remember that he's actually not that good. He has some value as a guy who could have given guys a rest. I think using him as a Love rest, a LeBron rest, a Richard Jefferson rest would have been really smart. But they didn't do that. So I think he doesn't play because he has just sort of a limit on what he can actually do. This is a guy who, he dunks, he cuts well, he's an okay defender, not a good shooter. There's a limit on what he's actually good at, especially if you're looking at how, if he can play the two. Like, if you're going to play him with the two, you're sacrificing a lot of shooting. I mean, even Shumpert, like, he's not necessarily a better shooter than Shumpert, which says a lot, I think. So, if you're the Cavs, I understand not playing him. If you're a Cavs fan, I think you're probably a lot largely tied up in how fun he was early and how useful he was early. I think that those moments just sort of pass. You're not going to have him probably do that type of stuff in the playoffs. So there's always going to be a limit on Derek Williams, and I think maybe trying him would have made sense. I'm not going to say that isn't true. I think there could have been use for him. I think there's certain things that could have worked, but also think there's just a limit on how good he actually is, and I think the hype early and the fun early kind of clouds a lot of the reality of Derek Williams, that there is a limit on what he can do, and I think that he was never actually going to be someone that was going to play in the playoffs. I think they could have utilized him differently, for sure. Used him to give Kevin Love rest, but again, Love's coming back from injury, and I think, you know, it could use him to give Richard Jefferson a rest, but they didn't do that either. I think it's sort of layered, I think it's sort of complicated, but I think there also are very understandable reasons why he hasn't played. So that's going to be it for today's show. Before we get out of here, thanks again to SeatGeek. Again, if you have questions, I'll try to answer them throughout the playoffs. Even if we don't do a straight-up mailbag, you can drop this to LockedOnCavs on Twitter, or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And lastly, I'm going to read an email I got from a listener who, hope he doesn't mind. His name is Justin Mink. And I think his email is a pretty good encapsulation of how people should sort of feel about the Cavs right now. So thanks to Justin for this email. He wrote, "I love this team, Chris. Unbelievably talented and at times painfully aware of it. LeBron's teams have always had the on-off switch, but this might be the most on-off-est of all of them. They just blew a 26-point lead and possibly lost the one seed in the East. But would it all surprise you if they lost one game in the Eastern Conference playoffs on the road to a third straight finals? Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. LeBron has always operated better with adversity, as Windy pointed out recently. There are still a lot of parts and pieces that need to coalesce, and adversity in the playoffs is the best way for that to happen. Let's get out of the regular season already." I am with Justin on waiting for the playoffs. I don't know how much we're actually going to learn zap-rooting all these games. I really don't think there's that much to learn about the Cavs right now. I think if they end up losing in the second round or the conference finals, maybe then these do become warning signs. But as of right now, I think you just kind of think, based on their track record and based on LeBron being LeBron, that they're going to have some sort of switch flipped come the playoffs, and they're going to be better off when that happens. They're not going to be the same team we're seeing now. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how the first round goes. Maybe they'll rest some guys. We don't know yet if players are going to rest on Monday after that game. I guess I can have a back-to-back. Number one seed still sort of is on the line because they haven't advanced that magic number. It's still at two. But if Boston plays Monday, Cavs play Monday, they theoretically could clinch it Monday. But we'll see if that happens. It doesn't seem likely that they're necessarily going to clinch right away. They might have to win out to get the number one seed. And if Flew plays his guys, Flew plays the guys. He said he would, so don't be surprised if that happens. Also, no, Kay Felder should be back with the team. So if they are going to give guys rest, they do have Kay Felder to eat up some minutes that Darren Williams would have to play. The Canton Charge lost over the weekend, and their season is now over. Felder played well all year with them, good 13 games with the Charge, and I think it was a good experience for him, but he's going to be back now, and maybe he'll get some reps if the Cavs do decide to rest guys, and if they want to give Kyrie a night off, which I think might be a smart play. But that's been today's Lockdown Cavs. We'll talk again tomorrow, talking about the Cavs Heat game, and hopefully it's a little bit less dramatic than what we've seen. I think a lot of you out there feel a little bit better if that happens. So, it's been Locked On Cavs. Thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.